I don't know, I didn't talk to him that long, he's got some stuff.
I'll double check, I'm almost positive we're looking into that already.
It's cloudy.
Now, 6 o'clock, we'll be opening the work session for November 13th, 2018, for the Nevada County Planning Commission. The first order of business is pledge of allegiance, followed by a moment of silence.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. The next order of business is the planning director comment.
Mr. Chairman, I don't have any comments at this time.
Okay. The next order of business is the public comment section. Anyone wishing to come forward and speak about any item, you will be limited to 3 minutes. State your name and address. Seeing no one coming forward, we'll end the public comments section at this time. We will go right into our work session, which is ranking of capital improvement plan for 2020 through 2024.
Mr. Chairman, we had a discussion last month and had the agencies here to talk about their potential projects and explain what they were hoping to accomplish with those projects. Now it's on to ranking the projects and making a recommendation to the Board of Supervisors for the public hearing to be held next month, scheduled for next month. We're using the same system we've used the past couple of years, ranking them 1, 2, or 3. I suggest going through the list from the page, top of the page on down.
Okay.
And we do have some folks here from the agencies that if there's any additional questions.
The first two items is something we normally go ahead and do is the county capital depreciation fund funded at 1 cent per year. I would rank that as a one. Something
no money in the column, it was just going on the 1 cent a year. I mean, there's no dollars actually.
That was what we just proposed, and the board's never funded it before. It would be fantastic if we could do 1 cent a year per, but I think that'll be maybe a.
But that's
because there's no dollars over here at the college.
No, there isn't. The board's never bought off on it. They bought off on the concept, but never bought off on funding, so we just leave it blank until somebody wants to bite on it. So it's not easy.
That's very sure. Definition of speculative, right?
Yeah.
Or wishful. Very good. Good plan.
Anybody got any other comments on that?
The depreciation, maybe Steve, you can answer this. Is that put up the money is like in a fund that when things depreciate, they need to be replaced?
No, like for instance, like
capital projects, especially. Go ahead.
Yeah, like for instance, like you build a building 1 year and you know in another 20, 30, 40, 50 years you're going to have to replace that building. Well, these dollars just build up and it's probably nowhere near what's needed to maybe build another $10 million building down the road, but those funds would be used for that instead of having to take out debt service or something like that at the time to do it.
So that money is just parked or invested?
Yes.
Set aside, yes. Like the cash was for the radio project, that was $7 or $8 million set aside. We ended up using it a little differently, but that money was set aside specifically for that project so it could be cash funded. This would allow us to cash fund smaller projects, maybe $1 million or $2 million or $10 million, depending on how much gets built in there. The 1 cent is just kind of a commitment to put something in there every year, but it'd be great if we slid a little bit more over there and still had our $8 million base. But it's really a kind of a structural discussion the board needs to have and then kind of commit to heading that way. The problem is your successors may not feel the same on the board, and so we just leave it there as a placeholder all the time.
And in the perfect world, you would fund it out of the tax rate for versus fund balance, yes, because it's kind of a reoccurring thing, which means you have to cut something or increase the tax rate. Yeah. So
actually, we recommended that by ranking it, we recommended that Board of Supervisors have a conversation about
sure,
it.
Sure, sure, sure. That'd be great. A footstop for the Planning Commission would be helpful.
Because you say that the successors may not want to continue to do that, mm-hmm, would we be binding for all future years?
Or
is the process just starting?
No. The Planning Commission has no authority to do that anyway. The Board of Supervisors also has no legal authority to bind a future board to a certain course of action on funding. Now, that doesn't mean that if they've taken out debt to build a school, that they don't have to pay back the debt. But they can't say, we're going to put $500,000 this way, and all future boards have to put $500,000 away for the same thing. Mr. Payne can tell you the legal language of it, but essentially a current board can't obligate a future board to a certain spending pattern or plan, except for things that have been approved, like a debt service payment, things like that.
But even if like a future, even if current board, you know, implemented a policy, a future board could change that policy,
right,
to say instead of we want our CIP to be a minimum of $50,000, they could say it's $100,000. So.
And our fund balance reserve is set at 12%.
Yes, 12% of governmental revenue.
Yeah, 12% of a certain number we look at. It's about $8 million. That's a policy. So a future board could change that up or down, but they've conservatively set it at that, and that helps us because it helps us a great deal in our bond rating to have a good reserve built up and not touched. So
we got two different things. One is the county capital depreciation fund, and the other is the school capital depreciation fund.
And it may not need to be separated. It the county's spends the money, so I'm not sure which way the board would want to go, but both of them are, you know, to build county-wide facilities of some type, so whatever you all decide to recommend.
I recommend that the Board of Supervisors look into it. It's a possibility of a good thing that they'd have to kind of study it and so forth like that. People that deal with the finances probably know a little bit more about it than some of us do. Does anybody have any objections to that? What does this Go Virginia program support?
So the Go Virginia program, Mr. Chair, the Go Virginia program is a private partnership, private and government partnership, where all the partners that participate in this was established by the state, but all the partners that participate in this try to have funding from government agencies to support certain types of projects in the community, most especially things that are collaborative, regional, cross county and cross regions. If you have a project with us in Louisa, for instance, to do a training program for a certain industry that we both have that we need training skills for, we could get money from the Go Virginia program. A big regional business park like Louise's planned or others could potentially be supported with Go Virginia funds, because Go Virginia funds support regional enterprises, whether it's training, training works, development projects, economic development things. But specifically this line is so that if there is a regional project that does get approved for this region, Region 9 and 10 combined, the Go Virginia region, which includes Planning Districts 9 and Planning Districts 10, there is a requirement for the localities that participate in that Go Virginia funding to put a share in. So it may be a $50,000 wedge or a $100,000 wedge, depending on the size of the project. Some things require a match, some things don't. I leave it there every year to remind the board that sooner or later they might have to pop some money into something, and we haven't budgeted for it, and it'd be nice to sit at least, $50,000 or $25,000 aside to support Go Virginia projects, because we would be the beneficiary of the fruit of that Go Virginia project.
But you don't have any recommendation of an amount listed here.
It was always at $50,000 because I briefed the board on that last year. We just don't have it listed there because it's another thing the board's got to decide to bite on or not bite on. So it's important but not critical.
In other words, you had a project that kind of benefited both Louisa and Fluvanna. You could go to the Go Virginia, and both of them may contribute, but also the fund itself may contribute.
Yeah, Go Virginia Fund would give you a grant for that project, but they would probably require some type of match from the localities. So
where does the money from the Go Virginia program support come from that they would give you the match grant from?
The money mostly comes from state revenues for the program, and then localities or regions also participate with their matches, but most of it comes from state funding to advance economic development through, whether it's through training, whether it's through business expansion, whether it's through transportation management, whether it's through almost anything that expands, it provides new jobs from out of state, bringing new jobs in, and that are higher than market rate for the area. It's a long, complicated formula, but there are big projects like the Louisa Business Park would be a prime candidate for something like that.
And it always has to be at least two counties collaborating.
Yes. Anything for Go Virginia has to be a collaboration, and it could be between two regions, two different Go Virginia regions. It could be between multiple localities in a region or just two localities, but it has to be something that you're not just doing on your own. If it was just a Fluvanna kind of thing, we weren't eligible for Go Virginia funding by itself. But if it's a regional project or a project that multiple counties or multiple regions are participating together, it gets the more collaboration, the higher the look it gets from Go Virginia.
Anybody got any questions, comments, or so forth like that? I don't see any problem with that. Evidently, we basically participated to a certain extent already. So
yeah, we are part and parcel through our planning to have our Central Virginia Partnership for Economic Development.
So I would go ahead and still rank it as a one. Does anybody have any objection to that? Okay, the next item is playground expansion. I know we've discussed this in the last meeting and so forth. Does anybody have any questions about that?
About playground?
Expansion, yeah.
Jason gave a pretty good synopsis last time. The handicapped, additional playground space, handicapped access, and things like that is the vision. So
I'll go ahead and say that I would rank it as a one. I don't, like I said, he explained it to us last time at our meeting, so we've got a lot of an explanation. Does anybody think it should be ranked higher or not ranked at all?
Can you rank it higher than a one? No.
One plus plus plus.
I have a question. Uh-huh. In your description of the project, if you say here, playground structure at Pleasant Grove does not meet these objectives for children in the following age groups: preschool toddlers, children ages 5 through 12, and children with special needs that requires social outlet for the socialization and developmental growth. That pretty much includes everybody.
That would want to play on a playground.
I think that the idea is to improve and expand it so that some of these things.
With special needs. So it does for kids without special needs, but it doesn't for kids with special needs. Because it says children's ages and children with special needs. It should say just children with special needs, because there are no special needs apparatuses at Pleasant Grove. But there are. I think I mistyped it. Because it should just say there's kids without special needs, because we do have equipment out there. That's up to 12 years old.
Yeah.
But we don't have any for kids with special needs up to 12 years old.
Okay, how I read it was...
I just read it.
Okay.
It's probably a little typo. I can fix it.
I think last time kind of explained it to us, so I... Does anybody have any ideas that we should rank it less than that? I'm not going to say higher. less than that.
No, I think
it should go to a one. Okay. If there's no objections, I'm going to rank that a one. Next item is the playground spray ground park. That is ranked a two. I'm going to express the fact that I'd like to see it ranked as a one, and the reason for that is there's a lot of kids that don't have a lot of activities unless they're involved in competitive sports and so forth like that. And I think that we need to have things for things like that. Like I've told y'all earlier, I noticed that how much that one at Yancey School in Alamo County was used. I also see the one down on McIntyre Road, how much it's used and so forth like that. We don't really have any, basically, any type of water sports of, this is kind of minor water sports, but of any kind in the county.
Well, I agree with you. I think it should be a one, two. The more of the spray that we can do is stay away from the pool. I've been in favor of that because the pool takes up a lot of money. Additional personnel, chemicals, and so forth and so on. So I agree with you on one.
And if I can add, you can always add to a piece if you lay it out right. If you start with like one piece, you can always add pieces to the spray part to make it bigger.
And I think that they talked about that they have the equipment to also to do part of the stuff already.
There's water in there and down there.
That's my idea. I don't know what anyone else thinks.
No, I can support that.
Mr. Chairman, I agree.
Okay, are we going to rank that as a one?
Yes.
Okay. We're going to move on down. We're in the Capital Reserve Maintenance Fund. The next item is Public Works Office Building Addition at Cary Brook. Wait a minute, I skipped. Capital Maintenance Fund is above that. That's at $250,000. That is a reserve fund to take care of projects, foreseen projects. Am I right about that?
Sorry.
Capital Reserve Maintenance Fund is to take care of unforeseen.
Correct. Unforeseen projects throughout the year, and then those requests go to the board to approve, and you know, it could be anything from $5,000, and it could be something as higher as, you know, up to $50,000 or more than that, just depending upon the needs. But it's something that usually that's unforeseen. And the $250,000 is just kind of an earmark amount that the board's approved before, and that's got to be kind of a placeholder. And choose to increase that or decrease that based upon the back sheet, which kind of shows what the potential needs may be.
Okay.
It seems wise to set aside money that you know you're almost certainly going to have to spend. You just don't know where.
I agree, and I think it should be right.
You'll notice on that one, that's one of the few things that's cash funded in the budget. It's funded in the tax rate. So
the next item is the Cary Brook equipment storage shed. I think it was explained to us that we need to
skip the office building addition.
Okay, I did, didn't I? Public Works Office Building addition in Cary Brook. I think it was explained at our last meeting that it was needed to actually be able to store equipment and some equipment now that we don't have actually the place to store it.
Mr. Chair, on that one, I'm covering Public Works. The actual first phase of that addition at Cary Brook
would be really to expand the facility itself, the existing old car
maintenance shop
from the high school. Because we'd want to move all the public works staff down to there, and that would be the place where bills could be paid for all the water systems and things like that. So it'd be expanding the end of that building and putting facilities there. The longer-term process for that is to then put some additional, whether it's pole barn, not terribly protected, or closed steel-sided building, to be able to put all of our equipment that's now stored outside inside facilities, because the shop itself is pretty much taken up with actual maintenance and not, there's not a lot of room for storage. That's what that one's for. And we haven't done an extensive cost analysis on that yet with actual bids and things. Those are kind of flag construction estimates. And then the equipment storage shed, that's that second one. That's a separate piece from it. So.
Steve?
Yeah, I kind of got it mixed up there for a second. Yeah.
That's okay. It's really kind of a comprehensive package, but it doesn't necessarily have to be done at the same time. But part of the goal of this is what we would do is, as these dominoes happen, we would then sell off the buildings on Main Street as we move folks out of these old houses that we own now. With the three of them along Main Street. So,
Mr. Chairman, can I ask Mr. Nichols a question?
Go ahead.
So I'm looking down, this is kind of a big process, yeah. Not this specific one question. Looking down, almost everything on here has currently been ranked a number one priority. Mm-hmm. So is that an indication that you guys have already vetted through this and decided these are the things we really need to do this year, or should we be questioning this harder? Maybe I'm asking the wrong person.
No, great question. Remember, what you've seen so far is you've seen the requests from the individual departments or agencies. And so they haven't been ranked by staff yet. They've been ranked by that department or that agency. So you are collectively now really looking at, on the whole list, what's the most important thing on the entire list? And then the next most important, the next most important. So I wouldn't necessarily rank things as 1, 1, 1, 1, 1 on your list. I'd rank them 1, 2, 3, down to 27 if you want. And maybe you think you only want to get down to 12 items. But the individual rankings that are now come specifically from the departments on what they think about the things that they have on the list in the current year and out years, what are the most important, and those are the ones. The ones that end up being twos or threes in the current year, they know they're probably not going to get down to that level, and we would hope that as it comes out of the Planning Commission, you do a broader ranking that's not by department, but by the whole list. So, because that will help, because there's no way the board's going to get down to, well, there's no way the board's going to fund this list. And I don't mean that they couldn't, it's just mean that they're not going to, because it's too big. I mean, it's $6 million worth of stuff. They're not going to fund $6 million worth of stuff this next year.
So last year, in our discussions, it was decided that you were going to talk to the different departments and basically rank the items and only put items that are basically a 1 or 2 in the current year that we are talking about.
Indeed.
So that's what I thought we were doing here. And I thought we were going to try to rank them based on. So now I'm confused because
all the departments came in and they put what they thought was most important to that department operation, whether it's taking care of kids for Parks and Rec, or whether it's firefighters, having the right equipment to do it, or whether it's Public Works having the facilities to put staff in. All those things were ranked independently by departments, but they were only supposed to put their most important and highest ranked, and that's what they did. A lot of the other stuff that they didn't even get to level 3 were pushed out to the out years. And so if you go down through like all the public safety stuff and all the county fleet replacement and all the public work stuff, there's just not much chance that the board's going to dig deep enough to fund all that in one year. And so if you hear from all the departments and agencies, and then you say, well, of all those 27 things we just heard about, the 14th thing down the list is the most important, then rank that number 1, and then number 2 and number 3. And it's a hard task to do, but that's how this has to be funded every year. So
if you're representing the public works folks, mm-hmm. which one of these are truly number 1 priorities for your group? Because it's impossible to say that these four that we know we're not going to get everything.
The historic courthouse renovation is by far the most important on there and needs to be funded. It was got some funding last year. It needs a tail funding to that. That is absolutely the number one. The other two, while they are significantly important and we don't have the space for everybody, we have one empty office in the entire county right now. And it's rapidly going to be filled. When we hire new public works, I mean, new utilities folks for the new water and sewer systems, we don't have any place to put them. So we're going to have to get to there. But the number one most important thing out of public works is the historic courthouse. And I doubt we're going to get much
more
than that.
But office space, it sounds pretty important.
Well, and it is, except that I really hate to piecemeal this. That's a public works solution. But it doesn't solve the Commonwealth's attorney's need. It doesn't solve the registrar's need. You know, those old office buildings over there really need to be sold off so we don't have to maintain them anymore. This space, this whole building, is going to be needed to support courts and courts operations. The sheriff's already outgrown his space, so he needs space for his overflow. The parole folks, the investigators when they do some investigations, the Commonwealth's attorney, the bailiffs, that would all be in here. We really need a separate county administration building. But if the board's never going to bite on that, and they haven't in the last 5 years, actually much longer than that because it was proposed a lot longer ago than that, but it's been on here for the last 5 years. If the board's not going to bite on that, I have to find some relief in the interim short term. I just hate spending $300,000 here and $200,000 there when you could spend $8 million and be done with all of it and get rid of all the old buildings. That's a big leap, though. We've got $100 million in debt already.
We're in the process of getting some proposals right now to look at a space utilization study.
Countywide,
for all county buildings to see if this combined administrative services school admin building is, you know, is this what's needed? They're going to take a look at, you know, what our current facilities usage is, what our, you know, future needs are going to be, you know, based upon growth projections.
Is it the most financially viable solution? Should we be renovating the old fire station in the basement of this building and putting the board room down there so they don't have to use the courthouse anymore, or making it into office spaces? We need a professional engineering firm to come in and buff up the study that was done in 1998, because none of that stuff is in
current.
None of it's current.
It's 20 years old.
So the board's already set aside money for that. We are still vetting those contracts. We're just not sure. So this year, I don't think you're getting very deep on this list. I'd pick out the top 10 things you think are the most important on here and rank them.
It's not, I wish we didn't know that in advance, because I thought we were just going to rank each item as we've done in the past.
I've been trying to get you to rank them for a long time. It just hasn't worked out that way.
Never been explained like you explained it just now.
In my head, it was always that way. Maybe we didn't explain it well enough, but I'm hoping that, you know.
Because we've never done it that way before, so therefore I'm just trying to figure out that we basically need to start over in our discussion, because.
Maybe, Mr. Chair, but I can tell you that you're not doing the Board of Supervisors any favors by ranking everything on here that's in that fiscal year as a one, even if you believe it's a one, because there's just not a chance it's going to be able to be funded. We have a board member here who can chime in and tell you what you think.
I was hoping you would say that. It's really important that you tell us what's most important, because we cannot afford $6 million, and we don't have the physical resources, people.
Manage all those projects at one time would be impossible.
So what's a realistic number? 1 million, 2 million, 52 million, 57 million?
775,000 is a realistic number, because that's the cash funded column.
Okay, that's a realistic number.
That's definitely a realistic number. Beyond that,
we don't know until we do the budget. We don't know what's left to fund any of this other than the 775,000.
And is the board going to be willing to take out debt service? Because we don't have $1 million in cash to be able to buy something of $1 million this next year. Comfortably without eating into Zion Crossroads cash funding. And so what is the board willing to do debt service on? And I would say not too much, unless it's a real So there's 700.
Got to have a fire truck because it's the last fire truck we have, and, you know, something like that.
So there's $775,000 cash. Mm-hmm. So that's real money, not tax rate, you know, not additional tax rate.
No, that's baked into the tax rate already, and we would want the board to continue to fund those things because that's like emergency maintenance.
Well, let me back up on that. Last year, the board did cut out.
Oh, sure, they cut out ours.
They cut out our capital reserve out of the tax rate last year.
That's true.
To keep within a certain tax rate.
Right. So that is in the tax rate, at least in theory.
It should always be, yes.
It should be.
And so, I mean, Mr. Chairman, I would propose, I guess, that when we try to rank all these things, if we took that number, 775, and let's just arbitrarily double it and say, okay, this is the most we can realistically expect they're going to find in the budget, and then take our top 2, 10, 8, whatever number gets us somewhere around $1.5 million. And say these are what we recommend, because I feel like if we do that,
that'd be so much
more. We will have given them useful advice as opposed to, and we won't take the time to rank these 1 to 27, because we'll know that the bottom, some number of those are ranked for no good reason.
And the board can add an item,
right? You know, exactly,
because these folks are all going to come and preach to the board too. They can add an item and stuff, but if you get the top 10, that'd be really helpful. And it may be $3 million worth, but, you know, rank a number of them, but don't.
So that's another method. Rank the top 10, and we see where we get. And if we're at $2.5 million, we should quit. If we're at $1 million, maybe we should go a little higher.
Indeed.
Is that a better system? Yep.
That works for
that's what I would propose. It sounds like it would actually give some suggested guidance to the board, and they could do whatever they want, as usual.
It's really important because you represent your constituents, and we know what's needed. You represent the fire rescue police, and we all have different interests. And so if you can give us what you think, it's much more helpful than just giving everybody what they want, because it just can't happen.
Okay. Let's start over. Basically, one thing, like, for instance, when we're talking about, we've got down here, we've got school buses, $150,000 and $450,000. Is this something that is, we want the safest transportation we can have for our children? So should that type of stuff be a top priority? And of course, we've got a big amount for vehicle apparatus replacements.
You can remember the self-contained breathing apparatus is off the second half of the project. One of the problems, if you don't fund the self-contained breathing apparatus, you got two different types of breathing apparatus out there. So they're not interchangeable. Firefighter gets in trouble, he can't hook into the other guy.
What's that? Something I saw that y'all got a grant or something.
No, we've applied for a grant. We applied about 6 months ago for the grant, and we were denied the grant. We applied again for the grant, and we're hoping we'll have better results this time.
And that's the $500,000 in the other column.
Yeah, what we applied for, I think we applied for
$887,000.
Yeah, $800,000. Yeah. Like I said, the board already appropriated $100,000 in the current fiscal year for fiscal year 19. So that's you know, a partial match right now. And I think they require, Eric, Steve, you know, was a 80-20 or 90-10?
Yeah, 80-20 match for the grant.
So if, you know, so the 100 should come close to our match.
I have a question about the breathing apparatus. It said in the report that we would be getting 96 units.
Well,
that's the dramatically pared down number from what was requested before.
Okay.
That's the screw that they would like.
We originally had a bigger number there, but that's sort of the minimum we can get away with pretty quick people.
Okay, that would be 24 units per station?
Maybe higher in one session if they have higher numbers of volunteers.
Yeah, correct. That, it may not be exactly, but it, that on average, that's correct.
When the original grant was put in, we put it in for about $1.2 million or something like that total, and we've scaled it way back where the total of everything's going to be about 800 some thousand.
Yeah, less than
to hopefully get a little more realistic and better outcome and results.
So was that a SAFER grant or assistant to firefighter grant?
AFG.
AFG,
yeah. Yeah, and Orange just got awarded that they got 800 and some change this last year, and so that may have been their second or third time doing it. So we pushed it again, really worked hard in the run at this time. The fire department folks all worked really, really hard on vetting all the requirements, and so it's about as tight as it can get now. But we won't know about the grant until fall at the earliest. So.
What about assistance to locality grant from the EFP? The ASL stuff that they give every year.
Well, you talk about the locality.
Well,
yeah, they could use those funds because we get about $80,000. I think it's about $80,000 a year, and they split it up between the four companies.
It's not coming close to this project.
No, it implies a lot of other smaller things, and the companies are really good about applying to those grants, and we've been pretty successful at it, but it's not the big rock one like these kinds of things. We also want to apply for the grant for a full ambulance.
The RSAF grant.
Yeah.
RSAF.
We'll be putting RSAF grants in for the ambulance, and we have another grant in for the Lucas system that we have on there. So hopefully partially offset the cost of that as well.
So my next question is, for each units, can they only be used by one person? You can't, you have a fire, not everybody shows up for that fire. Maybe out of the 24, you get 8 people that show up.
Typically, they're assigned to a person, but as you heard earlier, they're designed to be interchangeable. But especially the masks, you typically don't share them.
Okay.
You really don't want to put somebody else's germs in your face.
Yeah, I was thinking, well, could you spray it with some
disinfectant? It's kind of like bowling shoes. This is on your face.
question is, could you have a certain amount of masks and a lesser amount of apparatus?
Conceivably. Typically, you like to have it all set up so the firefighter can just put it on and go. You don't need to be You don't want to be assembling equipment in an emergency situation.
Mr. Chairman, I have a question.
Go ahead.
In the actual capital improvement plan, the column that says prior fiscal year county funds, are these funds that were actually allocated?
Yes.
So these funds were already sent to?
Yep. So the $100,000 is already set aside in the county's capital improvement fund to match that grant should we get it. So if, let's say, we don't get the grant, all the county has really set aside right now for the SCBAs is $100,000, and they're not going to get too far.
So it's going to be a big problem, yeah.
Yeah, so if we don't get the grant, the board's going to have to come up with, because these are at end of life, they're going to have to come up with whatever we determine is the appropriate amount if the board has to fund it fully out of cash.
And without these items, you can't enter a burning building.
Yeah. We don't have fire protection without it.
So down at the vehicle apparatus, we're showing in prior year funds $566,000. And then the coming year, that's $1,082,000.
Yeah. The $566,000, though, is already obligated. It's already encumbered. The $100,000 that we did for the SCBAs is money set aside for future SCBA buys and hasn't been used yet. Yeah. $566,000 has already been assigned to a specific buy. So it's used. It's just reflecting what was funded in that line last year, but it's not available anymore.
So the $100,000's not available anymore?
No, the $100,000 is, yes, because it was set aside specifically for SCBAs, but we didn't buy the SCBAs because the grant didn't come through. So it's still sitting out there in the bank, identified for SCBA purchases. The $566,000 is in the bank. They may not have awarded the contract yet, but it's already identified for what it's going to buy. It's already been obligated for that buy. So we're, it's just reflecting how much you funded last year in those lines, the board funded last year in those lines.
Yeah, anytime we have projects that kind of go from year to year, we kind of want to show what was actually funded the prior year, just so you can kind of get a better idea for that lifetime project. And you can see from the vehicle apparatus, there's, you know, going out every year, there's
If you fund $500,000 a year for vehicles, you can see how you're going to get behind really quickly. Because, you know, it's $1 million some this year, $1 million some the following year, almost $1 million the following year.
So we have a plan out through, at this point, 2036, because we have a 20-year replacement cycle. So I have a spreadsheet that, that Wayne Stevens also has a copy of that's, that goes out with the whole fleet replacement through the next 20 years.
Those are based on industry standards.
Yeah, the VDFP standards, they define the life of a fire apparatus as 20 years, and ambulance, we're defining as 8 years because they go out a lot more.
Right.
So we okay,
let me ask. The,
go ahead.
I want to ask them some questions.
Okay.
We'll increase your pay.
Yeah, thank you.
What do we as a group right now think is the number one priority out of this list?
So I would say the number one priority for me is things we know we're going to spend anyway, which is the capital reserve. I really believe that. I mean, we know we're spending that money. We just don't know where and on what. So let's just be honest and say this is we're spending that money, so it's a number one priority. That's my thought.
Yeah, you have two different ones. You have a regular capital reserve fund, and then you have a capital reserve fund for the school.
I'm pretty sure both the sets of buildings are
They're identically required, identically needed, you know, for
are you going to take care of them school buildings better than you have? No. So we don't need that
money. We're catching up. And we've done that through the capital reserve maintenance.
Okay. I mean, but that's just one idea. I'm just saying that's my thought. Is I feel like that money's essentially spent already. We just don't know where it's going to be spent.
Okay. Back when we were talking about the community services and the playground spray park, you know, although I thought that that would probably be a good idea and so forth like that, because of the talk about the limited funding, should either of those two projects, should they be lower on the ranking than some of the other stuff?
Yeah, I think so, because the other thing you got to look at, if you remember right from the presentation, the courthouse presentation, the renovation, and the sheriff's vehicles, if we continue to have to repair those items, each year it keeps going up on the cost to fix that. So you got to think about, you know, do we need to fix it now so we can save some money now and maybe next year get something else?
Well, the historic courthouse, this is probably the final phase of that.
The historic courthouse
hasn't even started.
No, it hasn't started.
The board put it. There was $195,000 earmarked for that
project. It wasn't enough before last year.
And then there's only $55,000.
We're adding on to it.
That's additional.
Yeah.
So that would
$250,000.
And would that fund the that?
Yes.
We think so, except we haven't gotten bids back yet. So once we write the contract and put it out as either probably it was an RFP because it's specialty work. It's not like a regular construction project. So it goes an RFP, and then we'll assess those bids when they came in and figure out. I'm hoping it's under the 250 cap.
Supposed to be and so forth like that.
The shingles, the shutters,
the eaves,
you name it.
And don't we have a sort of a deterioration?
Oh, the columns.
Terrible.
The columns, yeah.
Well, the shutters are even more shaped. Columns, you can. They're still solid stone, although they're pretty damp inside the bricks that are inside the columns. But the shutters are ready to fall apart.
So, in my thinking, then that's probably something that we should recommend to be funded.
indicated that that was his number one priority.
Well, from a public works point of view, definitely. I wouldn't fund anything else unless we just couldn't get that one. That would be the one. It doesn't mean it's higher priority than life safety.
Okay.
And that's the concern, is that, you know, there may be some life safety things on the schools list. There's life safety things or public safety things on the sheriff's list, and life safety things on the fire and rescue list. And, you know, if you only got 10 things deep and it came to the two CRMs and some sheriff stuff and some school and rescue stuff, you may not get to the courthouse. But
Mr. Chairman, my position is public safety and ensuring that the school system, because we have students that are about to graduate from high school, that looking at, and from my understanding of the presentation the previous week, or the previous meeting, we're talking about necessities that they need in order to further their education, you know, and it's not the sheriff's office, the fire department, it's nobody's fault, but this is like where we are. Public safety and education are high ranking on my list. I don't want any items to be damaged or destroyed, and I don't want to see the historical courthouse, you know, to continue to deteriorate. And I don't know. I mean, is it at the point where it would fall on someone's head? Is rain coming through? You know, we're talking about living, breathing folks that need things to happen. If something happened at one of our houses or to one of our family members, we would expect fire and rescue and police to show up. And if we have things that are not working, that's a concern. And not that we can fund them all, but as we've stated a couple times here, we're getting more and more behind the eight ball. And we've got to really think about that, in my mind. It's not going to get any cheaper. And I'm not taking away from the historic presence of the courthouse, but I think that we have to focus on some of the other things where it is a life, health, and safety issue. And these individuals, in terms of the educational portion of it, they're going to come back and sustain our communities. So we have to make sure we provide them with what's needed in order for them to graduate.
So just a note, from the department's perspective, there are 20 number ones on this list, and nominally, because the three at the top are not department ranked, they're just up there as hoping the board will consider those things. So take those three off for a second. There are 17 number ones. Pick up the top 10 out of those 17. Ignore the twos. And it's nice that you could get to the twos, but you're not gonna. So you got 17 to choose from. If you want to rank 10 of them, figure out which 10 those are and ask the people here that represent those areas on how critical those items are.
Have we ever been able to fund all the groups? Meaning we have this limited budget
something
here.
There's been years where we funded even Parks and Rec, and that's been fairly low on the list. We've even funded Parks and Rec in some years, but normally Public Works has something, Sheriff, schools, and Public Safety always has something. So pretty good, but we've never gotten to the bottom list in any year.
I can tell you school buses have been funded every year, maybe not to
some to
the degree that they would like, and sheriff's vehicles have been funded every year, and again, maybe not to the degree that they would like. But
and that's for the last 6 years. Before that, maybe not.
And some apparatus, too. Again, I mean, we funded a portion of them, maybe not all of them.
We had to ask the gentleman from Fire and Rescue a quick question.
Sure.
So, just so I remember and understand a couple key points of major items. The CPR assist devices.
Right.
Those actually, and if I'm wrong, correct me, but those actually help us have potentially fewer staff on the ambulance.
Correct.
Which is a significant issue in Fluvanna County. So So I would.
Especially at certain times of day.
Exactly. So that's my way of saying that seems pretty important because it helps fulfill a manpower issue that we're not likely to solve quickly, if ever.
That's absolutely right. Yeah, that's the biggest advantage that I see to them is a manpower issue. And as I mentioned earlier, we are already applying for grants to offset some of that cost. So hopefully we can reduce that cost a little bit.
And so that seems pretty important and has these benefits beyond just the benefit to the person who needs a CPR device and the, you know, benefits to staffing levels and things like that. We already talked about the SCBA.
Mm-hmm.
So the other items, obviously, the drawing tools are not critical, at least today, because they're a number two. What about the other two risks there? Can you give us some guidance so we can rank those a little bit more effectively? And I know I put you on the spot, but
yeah. Well, I mean, I only put things on the list that I thought we really needed. As Mr. Nichols mentioned, you know, we really did try to keep the fluff out. The fire engine is well over 20 years old. It's already been pushed back a couple years. It's a couple years overdue. The water rescue truck on there is a 1991, so it's 27 years old at this point. And the ambulance is requiring quite a bit of maintenance at this point. So, I mean, I hate to say it, but all three of them are, in my mind, quite important.
And that's the 566 plus the million?
Yeah.
Well, the 566 is, that's prior.
Well, that's prior.
That's already funding something.
That's funding prior.
No, those three vehicles he mentioned are the 566.
No.
They're just the million?
Just the million, yes. So it's about $500,000 for a fire engine, about $250,000 for an ambulance, and I think I have
$180 something.
Yeah.
That 566 is basically already committed to bid.
That's yeah. other
we're just showing you how much that you so don't have how much the board spent in that area last year.
Yeah. That's already been approved, and it's they're already working on purchasing those vehicles already.
So, and I tend to agree with Ms. Murray Key about kind of things that are a high priority. Can we ask the sheriff, who just walked in? So I was going to ask this gentleman, but I guess anybody, how they would rank whatever the courthouse security upgrades and then the number, the total package of the dollars for the vehicles. So,
wow.
So we're trying. We've got 75 potatoes and a bag big enough to put 10 in. I'm trying to figure out which 10 are going in there. And you guys have the guns, so you got somewhat of an advantage.
Well, with the security upgrade, I can tell you, at our office in the past was a nightmare for security. You know, being able to record what's going on around you. If you have previous threats that you didn't know about, we can go back and look at. The other day when people left the courthouse, there was things going on amongst the people. It was a very sensitive case. Deputies had to walk out into the parking lots. We have to have, those things have to be recorded to cover ourselves.
And that's what that security upgrade is mostly.
Absolutely.
The video monitor.
The stuff there has been there way too long, just like in our office. Everything is pretty much dated. But to put a value on both, I mean, to me, everybody's safety is paramount. Having a vehicle that's dependable and reliable to be able to get to where we need to go is absolutely important. And our priority vehicle to go to the road, the 18 people we currently have on the road, they get the new cars, they get the new thing. We're replacing an investigative vehicle, you can get a used car. So we're spending our money wisely. We're putting the most modern technology in these vehicles so that when things do happen, it's recorded. I get very few complaints now from people. When they do, I say, when can you come down and watch the video? Protects the county, protects the citizens,
sure.
Makes the officers accountable.
Sheriff, that courthouse security upgrades, did that include the fingerprinting?
Captain Hill, if you would allow Captain Hill to, because he's been working on this project, but I believe it is.
It does include the fingerprinting.
Yeah, that dollar figure. Watch, man. Because in the past, what we were doing, we had somebody need to be fingerprinted. They had to take them to run our sheriff's office, get them fingerprinted, and then bring them back. So you got a security move twice.
Right.
And when it can be done right here, and they either go back to the jail or they get released.
Right.
So those are, and when it comes down to the least amount of times you have to move somebody, the safer it is for everybody.
Sure. Well, you have not helped us narrow this list.
Sorry. I'm very sorry. I mean, it's just, it's one of those things, even like in our office, you know, we have a small office, but yet everybody in our office, I don't know how many times a day I probably visit the investigators two or three times. I go to property and evidence room once or twice a day. I'm in communications four or five times a day. And that's the way it is in our office. It's busy because investigators, everybody at some point or another winds up in the communication center. They're getting something taken care of, some information ran, something that they need. And it's really nice being where you can walk to something. You know, we're cut away from our court staff over here a little bit, but their job descriptions are a little different than the road people.
So we're basically, if your sheriff's vehicle is approximately $218,000, how many vehicles does that supply, and does that replace the vehicles that need to be replaced?
Well, we were saying, we're trying to modify. So a used car for an investigator or a admin person, we're going to have what, about?
About 27,000, 28,000 vehicles once we're done with everything. Whereas the patrol vehicles are considerably more. You're looking at all the upfitments with that vehicle, rounds out the vehicle around about the high 30s to low 40s, around 38 to 42,000 for that one vehicle.
And the automobile industry is not doing law enforcement any favors. What we don't get this year will be significantly higher next year. The SUVs that we have now, if we get one right now, it's about 29.
We're
probably going to be 32. Everything's on an uptick. Plus, they're modifying that vehicle, so we can't use our old equipment.
We've been able to make some savings from year to year by taking the equipment in the other vehicles and exchanging it and replacing it into the new vehicles. Now, we're unable to do that because they're putting expirations on the models.
Yeah.
And so the expirations are coming at the tune of about between every four to six years. And they're narrowing that every year. And so we're looking at about every 5 years having to put all brand new equipment in the car and not do that. So that drives the upfitment cost higher every year for those vehicles.
And it doesn't help the county. We can't turn around and sell it to anybody else on the market because
Right. Nobody's
going to have that vehicle in use now. And
Right. It's
turning into an industry standard for equipment. Taser is our last industry that has come back to us and say, okay, this brand, and they all have letters and numbers that I can't remember, but from now on, from this day forward, we will no longer acknowledge that equipment. And if you use it, we're not going to back you up in court.
Yeah.
So you have to turn around and buy their new equipment. And when that is at the end of their life, then you're at their mercy to turn around and buy additional equipment. It's turning into that for lots of equipment, like our sidearms. We have to cycle them out this coming year because we've had them. And it's either pay $130 to replace the night sight or replace the whole gun for
About $240.
$240.
To replace the whole thing.
Like we can use these as a trade-in.
And, of course, the service life extends because everybody's using that five-year use of life policy now with their equipment. And we're seeing it a lot in our industry in getting public safety.
They're not guaranteeing it past that time. And if you're using that equipment and something happens to your employee or the person you're arresting, it's going to fall squarely back into our lap.
Right.
I don't want to cut you off, but it's almost time for us to end the work session, and then we have to go into our regular session. And we could probably extend this over into the regular session. A couple of suggestions I might make before we end this session is maybe next year, as it kind of improved the ranking system somewhat, but maybe if they rank it one something. Maybe we should have a, for each category of each department, we'll have a one star. In other words, the top one priority.
But we can do that. We can have them rank it 1 through 37 or whichever way you'd like, Mr. Chair. But the point is, they're supposed to come in here. You're supposed to ask them questions, vet that really out, ask hard questions about, like Ms. Eager was asking, you know, do you really need this or do you need that? The CPR assist devices, they're asking for four. Why do we need to fund four of them for four ambulances when you only have one primary on the road and sometimes a second ambulance? We don't need necessarily do that all in 1 year. But if you ask all those questions, you'll get down to a number you can manage. But again, you only have 17 you really need to even talk about. If somebody put a 2 on, you're not going to get to that deep this year.
And at the end of the day, if you say you go for 10 of these and it comes out to $3 million, well, then it's, you've narrowed it down for the board for them to determine, okay, well, this is what the planning commission feels are the top priorities. And then the board's going to have to say, no, this is what we can go forward.
Yeah, and we could have them rank them 1 through whatever in their departments, so you knew what their number 1 was. We can certainly do that, but you know, trying to get batches of things, we'll gladly modify however you need it to be here.
I was just thinking that maybe, you know, knowing what their, although they rank a lot of different things number 1, what the actual number 1 priority.
Yeah, in the world of big people, you have to make hard decisions, and having four number ones, you have to be really serious that they're all really number ones because you have to have them, or you got to be willing to rank them 1, 2, 3, and 4. So, okay. Good point.
We're going to be ending the work session at this time, and we will let anybody need a break before we go into our regular session. We will call to order our regular meeting for the Pluvanna County Planning Commission for November 13th at this time. Our first order of business is Pledge of Allegiance, followed by the Oath of Silence.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you.
The next item is the director's report.
Chairman, just a couple of items. Of course, the Board of Supervisors did approve 2 text amendments last month, our home occupations and our density updates to R3. Both of those were approved by the board. And I might make a suggestion that we move our presentation until after unfinished business, the capital improvement.
Okay. Okay, the next item is...
Mr. Chairman, I did have one question for the planning director, if I might.
Okay.
I was looking at the code compliance violation, and where does it stand with the court, the 2428 Richmond Road case? Do you know where that stands? Is that...
They were actually in court today, and it was dismissed because he's substantially in compliance now.
Okay. I guess I should ask how the neighbor, if the neighbors think he's substantially in compliance, but how is that? Never mind.
It looks like there's nobody there.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. I haven't been by there in a couple weeks.
The next item is the first of 2 public comment sections for tonight. Anyone wishing to come forward to speak on any item, please come forward, state your name and address. You will be limited to 3 minutes. Seeing no one coming forward, we'll end the first of 2 public comment sections at this time and go to the minutes of the October 9th, 2018 meeting. Does anybody have any corrections, or does anybody have a motion to accept the minutes? Or
make a motion to be accepted.
Okay, I have a motion by Mr. Johnson to accept the minutes as presented. Do I have a second?
Second.
Have a second from Mr. Lagasina. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye, 5-0. We're going to skip the presentations and go over to unfinished business and continue our discussion of the ranking of the capital improvements plan. I have some concerns, like for instance, the vehicle apparatus for the fire and rescue. I understand that we need these too, but we're talking about $1,082,000 right there, and if we add the self-contained breathing apparatus, so we're talking about $1,600,000. So we probably need to take a look at that and see whether, like it was suggested, whether we need that amount of breathing apparatuses and so forth. And I saw somebody talk about the CPR to assist devices, which is probably something that actually is a helpful tool. But are we in the possibility of being able to fund all of those? And where should we rank those?
How many, we have one assist unit, don't we?
Correct. We have one at this point that Mr. Nichols was able to purchase for us for this year as a pilot program to see how well they work. And the answer is spectacular. And so we would definitely like to deploy them on the rest of the ambulances that we can, which is why the request is. Now, if you all decide to only give us one additional one, that's one more than we have. So, you know, that is a choice you can make. You know, I would like to see them on all the ambulances because...
How many ambulances do we have?
Lake Monticello has 4 ambulances and a response car. Clevana County Rescue, their OMD is not permitting them to use them yet, so we are not requesting any further Clevana County ambulances at this point. We are hoping that over time she will change her mind on that, but there's no guarantee on that. So we may come back and revisit that in the future
for the
Clevana County apparatus. So. But at this point, we're just equipping the Lake Monticello ambulances with them.
So you need 3 more?
So 3 for the ambulance and 1 on the response car. So we're looking for a total of 4.
How's the response car used?
It's an ALS assist car primarily. So one possibility would be if the county crew had a cardiac arrest that they needed help on, one of our medics could go out and assist them and help them in that way.
Could you put 1 on the response car as a stopgap instead of the other 2 ambulances?
Sure. That is definitely an option, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. If you get to the point where you're only going to do 1 of them on it, I'll just pull it off here and I'll put it in their operational budget and just fund it in their regular operational budget. Because if we're going to buy a bonus of them, we want to get off contract. If we're going to buy 1, it's $14,000 or $15,000. We'll do an operational dollar to take it off here. The monitors that are farther down, we have to do those in big batches because all the ones that they have are not going to be supported anymore and are going out of life. So we've got to get a piece of that pretty quickly and then some every year for the next several years.
And again, we are going to be applying for grants on those as well. It's not in this year's budget yet because they're not at end of life yet, although we know when that end of life is. But the manufacturers have not released their newest models yet, so we haven't been able to evaluate them to determine which way we want to go on those. So it's a placeholder that we know it's coming and it's going to be a big chunk of money on those.
Okay, I'm going to ask everybody right now one question. Can I get a sense of what everybody's number one item is?
I'm sticking with the maintenance funds because, as I said, we're spending that money. We know we're spending that money. So let's be honest and say, okay, that's a priority because we know we're spending it.
So both of those are basically co-number ones or a 1 and a 2?
1 and 2. School numbers. I mean, that's my opinion. I just,
okay, that's fine with me.
I keep going back to, I know we're spending all that money.
So we got...
buildings are going to keep breaking.
Capital Reserve Maintenance Fund for school, number one. The sure. Capital Maintenance Fund for the rest of the county is number two.
Yes.
Okay.
And...
okay. In... I need to ask the question from the school system here real quickly. This Courage Brook Elementary roof replacement phase two.
Yes, sir.
Is that something that has to be done this year? I know we already moved some stuff over into the next year, increasing that a lot, but that was just a question.
I would say that we could, but I don't advise that. If I were to adjust this recommendation, and again, I'll first say that all six of them are important, I would look at continuing to do that process. Maybe not. So $700,000 would complete the remaining 75% of the roof. If we were to get a percentage of that, we could do the next section or the next phase. So $700,000 doesn't have to actually be the number that is given to the school. But that is one of our numbers.
It's not terribly efficient to do roofs and
right.
and wedges.
Agreed.
Yeah.
You
need to bite that one time. Sorry.
Thank you. We could do it, but I don't recommend it. But
well,
we
well
had
now
to.
We're at 1.2 million. That would stop with 1, 2, and 3. Steve.
Yeah. But again, some of the stuff is baked into the tax rate, and you have to give more than. You got a number up to more than what you think the board might fund to give them choices. They're going to go around the choices anyway if they decide they want something different or if the story becomes different. But you're not going to get to $6 million, so you don't need to get that deep. But I'd go to $3 million at least.
I can also assist a little bit. So we have student transport facility vehicles. That's ranked as a one. That's at $75,000. Again, we would like that, but. Not a deal breaker.
Can you deal with 40 on that?
We can deal with any percentage. We can deal with any percentage.
So you can some of those you can knock down, like on the first,
yes.
first line 37. Cut that in half.
And I think if
and
we
line 38, you can cut out.
But at the same time, I mean, should they just recommend whether they think that project is enough?
Yeah,
the board,
I don't think they're gonna get that deep, really, but.
If we had to go fleet, if we had to go vehicles versus bus fleet, we would prioritize the bus fleet first.
Okay, so we're at number one, number two, basically. What is the next item on the list that we think that, and I will tell you my thinking right now, we should actually eliminate the playground stuff. I have concerns about the rescue squad, fire department stuff. I also think that we need to make sure that we fund the school buses, so forth. And you know there's one item on here that I've always said that should be in the school budget that's on the CIP, but because of, you know, I like to buy by rules, and by rule, according to the comprehensive plan, that doesn't apply to the rules. And that's the computer instructional technology, although I think it's something basically needed, but it's, I don't think it should be in the CIP. That's my personal opinion.
And remember with the instructional technology, that was adjusted at the last meeting, and I had Mr. Gifford here for those two servers. Last year, we were not funded with the CIP through the Instructional Technology Fund. This year, it is one of our number ones. We hope to start that project in the summer. That is our hope.
What I would think that right now, that as far as the rescue squad, the vehicle apparatus stuff, I my personal opinion is that should be number three.
The SCBA?
Line 34.
34? Oh.
Yeah, I would put the SCBA before that.
I would too.
Yeah.
Or the CPR assist device. You know,
okay, so.
31 or 32 should be.
Yeah, I mean, if we're looking at eliminating stuff from number one, anything that increases services, so for example, the office building addition for Carriagebrook on the Public Works and equipment storage shed, I know they need them.
Well,
that's a item that adds.
But the office building addition is something that's needed because we only have one office.
But Steve's looking also, he's working, he made it clear that, you know, there's a vision for sort of realigning the office for the entire county-wide staff. And, I mean, that's the kind of thing, if you really think you're going to build a building, even 10 years from now, we're way better off renting something somehow than building anything.
And I'll tell you that there's no way that I have enough staff time with all the water projects stuff going on and the other things to do both the historic courthouse and additions to other buildings this next year. So, and I don't want the funding 2 years before I need it. So I would just pull those off. They're important. We need to do them, but they're really there more as a discussion item than have to fund today.
Okay. So are we going to go with the 31 is number 3 and 32 is number 4?
I think they could par down 31 to 1 and put it on the response vehicles.
Right. And if they pare it down to 1, then Steve's, it's not going to be a
CFP. We'll pull it off. Yeah. I'll find it out. Right,
so I would scratch that.
So we're going to take that off.
And the SCBA becomes whatever number we're at.
Three.
Okay.
Yeah, because they can't do their job without that.
So right now, I think we need to concentrate about the.
And that's $100,000, right?
Right, and we need to also talk about how we're going to do about the vehicle apparatus replacements for the fire and rescue squad. But then we also need to make sure that the school bus is funded, as far as I'm concerned. So somewhere in that range. You know, I think both of those are something that we've got to consider.
How many school buses is this for?
Sir, is it regular school bus? $90. It's a bus call. I mean, we could.
Mr. School person, we have a question.
Each school bus is about, I can tell you, school buses, I think they're pricing at right around $100,000, so probably about six buses.
Six buses.
So this is from the cost of six buses?
That's six buses.
And how much did they cost?
I missed it. There's about $90,000 to $100,000.
So we've got a lot of buses that are actually past the recommended state.
6 miles.
Is the state at 15 now?
15 years.
Used to be 12 until the crunch of numbers that they've changed up to 15. How many vehicles we got that's 15?
30, I believe.
Which basically, we're with this funding, you're only replacing about 5 that are out of the 30 that really need to be replaced.
Yeah, the sheriff has the same problem with his vehicles being outdated. You go back to your concern about the vehicle apparatus for fire and rescue. They all have the same thing, so maybe there's a way to kind of spread that out amongst all three so that everybody gets something.
Right. That's what my question is, because, you know, I think the citizens also need to see that these issues are being addressed. So when someone who cares about fire and rescue, and they don't see anything or feel like anything is happening, and we're taking care of buses, but all the funds went to that. To me, it's important that you all collaborate and help us figure out where we are negotiating at, because unfortunately, it's going to impact somebody pretty hard. But we just
we want to be in the practice of doing the right thing for the right reasons, and we want the police to come. Homeland security is a major issue right now everywhere. We know that. Fire and rescue. Look at the fires just happening in California. Nothing is preventing any of us to become any statistic that we're seeing on TV. So if we're trying to maximize the money that we have, what negotiations can you all come up with? I know that the last time that we had spoken, we talked about social services having somewhere around 9 vehicles or something like that. And how could we look at, you know, doing some allocations and transitions with that? Are you all able to find out any more?
We're squeezing social services as hard as we can to let them know when they have a vehicle that sits 75% of the month and another vehicle sits 75% of the month, then it sounds like maybe they don't need a 2 whole vehicles. It's been a challenge, but they do have some old vehicles they need to replace, so they need about 1 a year on a cycle.
We did decrease their vehicle count by 1.
Right.
They have 8 now.
What's that? Yeah.
They have 8.
Right. Yeah, it's going down.
Yeah.
There was a 1999, I think it's some last time, a Chevy Cavalier that needed new tires, and paying $400 for a 1999 Chevy Cavalier for new tires was not, plus the engine was not that fantastic, was not a good investment. So
they've come down, but they're not going to ramp down anymore. They're not going to get down to 3 or something like that. They need them for their services. And I think it's a really hard stretch to have the schools talk to the fire department to see, okay, who needs it more this year. That's part of what your vetting is for. You've got the people to come to advocate for the area. You kind of have to make some hard decisions on what we can afford. But it ultimately comes down to what the board is willing to do with the tax rate and how much revenue we've got. So this is a good part of the preliminary discussion, but it's really going to come down to what the board is willing to do when it comes to the tax rate and debt service financing. So
and the board always has options. I mean, whether they want to do it as a whole or not, I mean, there's always debt service
for a fire truck or
loan proceeds they can take out for different purposes. Now, whether they want to do that or not, that's up to the board. But there are options to fund what's on this list, and there's.
And Eric has a few pieces of good news for him this year on some dollars, but it's not going to solve the world. But
I have something to add about the social services vehicles. Sure. I think they have like about 30 people who work in the
yeah. Social 31 services. 31 or 32, right?
They have 8 cars. Now, when they drive to work in their own car, if they need to go to a client's house, they hop in one of the county cars.
Yep.
But if all 8 were gone, they would get in their own car and charge a county mileage.
They would pay mileage.
It's never like they can't get to where they need to go.
No, absolutely. And the vast majority of those 30 never need the cars, except mm-hmm. maybe they're going to training. But they don't need them for their day-to-day jobs,
right.
Because many of them are just health services specialists that are in the office. And they don't go site visits and stuff. But
does anybody take any home at home in case they have a call at night?
There's one or two that are on call.
Yes.
Yep. And there is a.
Now I don't know if they take a vehicle.
They don't take the vehicle, and they get on call pay.
Yes.
Right.
Okay. It's like a $10.
Well, we need to make some decisions where we are on the ranking here. We've got 30 school buses that are 15 years old. They're at the, according to the state that they're in this life. But we got behind a long time ago. We've been talking about that for many, many years and so forth like that.
And we could probably say that about all the vehicle categories.
Yeah. Well, the county vehicles are caught up. I mean, we need to maintain, but the county vehicles are finally caught up after 7 years.
And I would suggest just, you know, kind of think about, so how do we help ourselves not get into situations in the future? I would suggest, for a variety of reasons, but including that it's going to cut down on vehicle use, the courthouse security upgrades with the fingerprinting thing sound like a great idea, because now we don't have to drive wherever. And not even thinking about the security issues driving prisoners around, but now the sheriff's
time control,
the deputies are going to not use vehicles.
And the camera system is upgraded because of what you've got.
That seems a pretty high priority.
Yeah. Oh, I agree. So do we want to right now talk about that as being a pool?
Can I go back to buses? I've got a couple questions.
Yes, ma'am.
The report said we have 30 buses that are 15 years old. And 19 buses that are over 20 years.
Yes, ma'am.
How many total buses do you have?
85, which includes the white activity bus, 67 of those, and I'm going to get, I'm pretty firm on these numbers, 67 are actually doing 84 routes, so we have 67 buses doing 84 routes. That means that some of our buses are doing double routes. They'll do a middle school Carysbrook run, then go do a high school run. So we have that bus doing two routes in one day or four routes in a day. Many of those are spares. So what happens is it's just like think of an expanded fleet in your driveway. There are going to be times that you need to change your tires. If you have another vehicle, you can go jump in your other vehicle while those tires aren't safe. There are going to be times I have to replace my son's thermostat in his car. We're lucky enough to have my 93 Ford F-150 that we use for hauling, and he can use that. So think of it on an extended level from a fleet category of having 85. The other thing that we do, and Mr. Wagner and his group down at Transportation and the Bus Garage, they do a great job. All those buses, so when you hear 85 and you hear 67 on the road, you're probably going, why aren't the rest of them? Because they're sitting out there. We're getting ready to take a transmission out of one bus. Transmission's good in that bus, but there's some other things that aren't good about that bus, so it's not on the road right now, and put it in a bus that is good. Not a great word to use, but cannibalizing our buses. And it's a good thing to do as long as everything's safe. So those numbers, when you hear that big number and kind of spares, but that's where we are right now. The cycle, we talked about it in our early on CIP meetings. The cycle is recommended 15 years. Okay, we have been talking about it, but between 15 and 20, I think is more realistic. No different than we're looking at the actual numbers between what we'd like to do, our stretch goals. 15 and 20, but we have to keep that cycle going. We were able to purchase 2 SPED buses this past year. Which we're very grateful for, because our SPED buses, our special education buses, we needed to replace them this time. So anything, we are grateful for anything, but obviously want to keep that cycle rolling.
Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, I'm sorry, you can go on with what we were going to talk about.
Were we going to make the security upgrades at the courthouse number 4?
I think that's a good idea.
Okay. All right. We've got 3 items here that I think we need to really take a look at, and that's the rescue squad vehicles, the sheriff's vehicles, and the school buses. Social service vehicles, I really don't know.
At least one off that would be good, because they're in a cycle where they need to replace one a year with
Is that 44,900 one vehicle?
No, 25.
So in other words, we should probably cut that down to
25.
But that would be a lower ranking.
Of all the safety-related type things, that and county vehicles are not necessarily high on the safety list. They just have to be replaced over time, but I would certainly rank the sheriff's vehicles and the buses higher than those in this year.
Would you rank them higher than the vehicle apparatus replacements for the fire department?
I don't agree with the assessment on all the fire and rescue vehicles, but this is not time for me to necessarily chime in, and then you all figure out what you need in there. But the county vehicles and the social services vehicles are not higher priority than the fire and rescue vehicles in this year. Some years there's a critical, even a county vehicle, even though it's not for life safety, it's critical because it we have to have it to do the job or whatever, but this year, no.
If we were to cut the school buses to four instead of six, you could fund the heart monitor replacement, start that.
Do 150 in cash for buses and 300 in fund balance if you want to go to 450.
So number five would be?
I think school bus.
$450,000 for school buses?
I think so.
And do the heart monitors for number six.
I think we're thinking with the sheriff's vehicles. Some of those should be some of those drivers. Oh, you're monitoring traffic control.
Are we skipping over the heart monitors for now? Are we making that number six?
I was making it number. I got number six for that.
Yeah, the heart monitor
is number six.
All right. So yes. Then we're going to go to.
I'd like to go to the sheriff's office.
Yeah.
Okay.
I agree. Yep.
Which has to make that number seven. Uh-huh. Sheriff vehicle.
So all of us have it. All of them? So what's that number?
It's 218.
218,000. You keeping track of the total?
I am.
We're going to run out of money out for it.
I'm not mad. I'm running out of fingers and toes, but I'm doing my best. So we got the school buses, so what about public fire and rescue vehicles? Is it more realistic to cut that number down some and do something?
One of the options you could do, and I'm not suggesting this is what is technically required by fire and rescue, but if you funded half of that, say 600,000, that gives the fire and rescue a chance to continue to argue, we got to have a fire truck, or we got to have a water rescue vehicle and an ambulance. I mean, they can mix and match and decide the priorities. I doubt that the board will fund the whole million this year, just because there's so many other priorities and things. So, but I think it's important to fund at least some of that for fire and rescue.
So let's say that you cut it down to 600,000 and rank it number eight. Do y'all agree?
Remember, all those individuals will have a chance to speak their piece to the board as well in multiple sessions. So.
Also, we need to talk about the roof replacement that we've already started at Carriage Brook. And my thing is probably that should be number nine.
Are we talking about funding the whole thing?
Well, if we don't fund the whole thing, it's going to cost us more over a period of time. And a lot of times when you start doing part and then you start overlapping, then you have leak problems between the two sections.
So that's for the whole thing, we're not cutting out.
I would.
Okay.
So we got number nine.
So I have us at basically $2.75 million. And so if we, you know, Steve gave some pretty good guidance, I assume it's pretty good guidance, that, you know, we're kind of looking at, we got $3 million out there.
I doubt the board's going to get past that.
Right.
So it would be good to rank up to there, but I doubt that we'll be able to afford much more than that.
So we're at, and he had suggested basically earlier that we probably rank the top 10 items. And we are at number nine, and looking at the figures and looking at what the board, I think maybe, in my estimation, we as the Planning Commission should read the rest of those in limbo and suggest that those are the top nine items that we would suggest to the Board of Supervisors. Mm-hmm.
I would add the computers as number 10.
You would add the computer instructional technology?
Yep.
Very nobody's going to argue with that.
I'm not going to say a word.
And I don't disagree with you that it's operating budget.
Yeah, I always thought the fact that, you know, when I was operations manager at where I was working, and we had 24 burner filters that we had, which we changed to once a month, so it was 288 that we used a year. I always had those in that budget. I didn't, you know, ask separate funds for something like that, so because it was something I was going to need for 5 years down the road, 6 years down the road, so forth like that. I knew I needed those 288 filters and so forth like that. I always thought the fact that because it's repetitious and what the comprehensive plan says, I have to have that with me.
And marks in the page. What a imagine that.
Says the CIP is a five-year plan that tries to anticipate all new or replaceable capital needs. Capital project is defined as generally non-reoccurring assets. Non-reoccurring assets, both tangible building vehicles and intangible software easement, license studies, services that exceed an established amount of $20,000. I think we raised it up to $50,000, right?
Yeah, there's a county policy that codifies what the board has said was included in CIP and capital reserve.
So anyway, that's that. I've always just thought that it should be put into the budget of the school if there's something that's going to be something that we're talking about forever. I don't know. Mr. Nichols disagrees.
I don't disagree. I just saying it is what it is, and the board said to it, so got to argue with the board on this one.
Well, also, then it's not included in the cost per student.
It is not, correct.
Yep. And that's not a fair reflection of what
the only reason it was moved over was the Board of Supervisors at that time wanted to ensure that money was spent on technology because it's such a high priority in our world today. And the only way the board could ensure that it was spent on technology was put in a CIP item.
I would think that the school would think that that's a top priority.
Yes, except that at the time they were spending stuff on different things and there were complaints about not spending enough on technology. And you can't pinky swear with them and make them do it because you don't have any independent authority to make them do it. When you give them a budget, they can spend it on whatever they want. It certainly, I know the school system thinks it's a priority, but it doesn't mean they have enough resources in that year to do it. So when the board moved it over, it was only because they wanted specifically spent every year on technology. But it can be revisited at any time.
Well, so a lot of stuff that's actually related to school is not considered in the amount that's spent per student. I mean, the school buses, that's the technology, the debt, and all of that. So most people in the county do not know how much we spend per student. Right. Technically, we get a figure based on the school's budget. It's not on the other part of the school assets that come from the county budget.
But I think if the board is going to continue to treat that computer spending as a C and other, if they're going to keep it here, that we should treat it like they're going to keep it here. I don't disagree that this probably should be in the school budget as an operation line. But if the board's not going to do that, we need to.
Oh, yeah, well, we're going to rank it number 10.
Exactly. Yeah, that's what we need to do.
And so that puts us at what do we come up with right now?
$3,081,000. That's close. If my math is right and I didn't drop
school buses could be put in the school's budget, too. You can move school buses and cars over. But again,
well, some counties do and some don't.
Right. When the schools need to spend money on something, like staff raises or on school books or whatever, they're going to probably lean more towards that and slow down a little bit of buses. Then all of a sudden it's going to come up and say, oh, by the way, we have to have buses now. So it's nice to have some fenced money. That's why it was put there originally. And that's why part of it was done in cash.
Was it? I'm thinking about the computer technology sometimes. It's really replacing pencil, paper, and replacing paper tests and stuff like that. So it's actually school function. But anyway, I'm always in favor of technology. All right, so that's as far as we're going to go and rate the top 10 and let the and turn that over to the Board of Supervisors and any other items that were left, it's going to be up to them for their thoughts because they could completely go a different direction.
Could, yes, sir.
Than,
but I think, I know this is a little change from what you all have kind of structurally done, but it's what staff has kind of always wanted. It's just never kind of worked out that way. It is, I know the board will appreciate it, so.
That's true. Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. Is that the end of our working on the capital improvements? Anything else that Mr. Nichols, that you think we should do in relation to that?
Eric and Eric?
Nope. Public hearing's on schedule for next month.
For us.
And
where they make the recommendation to the board on capital.
So,
and that will be, this 1 through 10 will be shown up when we have our public hearing.
Yeah, we'll have the new sheet updated to that, but we will have the planning department, and in concert with finance, send the updated sheet on what you did tonight back out to all folks that have anything on the list, so they can see where it's at, so they can come to the public hearing night and advocate for something different if they need you to. But we'll send it back out to everybody with your rankings.
You know, the odd part about it is a 5-year plan, but some of this stuff been on here for 10 years.
Yep. Yep. If we had unlimited resources, this would be a lot easier thing to do. But
anyway, so if that's, we'll stop talking about the capital improvement plan and move on to, and I didn't lost my sheet of paper here. Presentation. We're going to have a discussion about property maintenance code discussion. Mr. Zoll from the building official will be.
Mr. Chairman, just a little background. Staff, Mr. Nichols, care task force, we've been tossing around different ideas on how we can tackle these issues in Columbia. And Mr. Zoll's here to talk about one of those, you know, options we may have that the Planning Commission, we'll be asking the Planning Commission to vet.
Yeah, this is, I gave this presentation a few months back.
Thank y'all.
It's really not just
that. Thank you all.
Structures. Go to the next one. So just so you know, right now in the county, we enforce the building code. And basically, the only thing that the building code allows me to do right now is to basically condemn structures if there's imminent danger to the people living in it or around it, okay? So that basically means if I get anyone complains about anything, and it's not just Columbia, I can go down there and I can take a look at it. If it's dangerous, I'm pretty much going to condemn the building and they have to leave immediately. There's no in-betweens. There's nothing.
Quick question. So, but all this is typically discovered through occupant complaints?
Yeah.
So it's not like we're inspecting buildings?
No. Someone has to complain and tell me about it. Yeah, I'm not driving around looking for it.
Which is unlikely to happen in Columbia, as well discovered, because folks, those folks are living in these places.
The complaint doesn't have to come from a resident, though.
It doesn't have to come from anybody. So, I mean, you know, anyone goes by and says, I think this building is falling over. I go out and I see it leaning into the road. Yeah, it's unsafe for the people driving by, and I can condemn the building, okay? But again, that's all I can do, okay? I can't do what they call it, which is covered by the property maintenance code, and that's things like infestation or, you know, leaky pipes or, you know, any of the things that a lot of people, typical renters, would complain about. Go to the next one. This is basically, this is the enforcement of the residential code, and basically that says we can enforce the residential code. The second paragraph down there is the part that you were referring to, and that's saying upon the finding of, by following the complaint of a tenant, then we can go in there and we can say, you know, there's a violation of the safety uniform code. We have to do it then at that point. Okay, so if someone calls and they're a tenant, we have to do it. So we'll go to the next one. Yeah,
you're allowed to go if the tenant.
I'm allowed to go in there if the tenant calls. Yeah, I can go in there.
You don't have to get the owner's permission.
Correct. But the only thing I can enforce once I'm in there is the part of the maintenance code that basically condemns the building. I can't do any other parts of the safety, the maintenance code, only the part that says unsafe structures. So in the maintenance code, the first thing is unsafe structures, and it tells you what it is. That's, you know, where it's inherently, imminently dangerous for people living in there. I can enforce that part. But the other part is like chipping paint and handrails missing and toilets not working, I can't enforce, even if they complain about it. Okay, go to the next one. And basically, this is what this says. It's the enforcement of the VMC, and basically that 104.1 actually comes from the building code. And it says, here's the scope of what we can do. And basically, underneath that, it's not shown there is new structures, and it tells you all the reasons you need to get a permit. And basically, it's new structures, new either one or two family dwellings or whatever. And then, basically, it says, however, the locality may also inspect and enforce provisions of the USBC for existing structures. Now, it says may inspect. So basically, if you notice down there in the red, it means we may do it, but we basically have to do it by local enforcement through an ordinance. So we have to actually adopt the Virginia Maintenance Code, okay, which we do not have currently.
Right.
We have not done that right now. Okay, you can go to the next one. That's just basically vacating. So that's just basically saying that if I enforce what I can right now, I basically it's immediate danger, and I have to actually order the occupant to immediately vacate the structure, which is pretty heavy-handed if you're just trying to get someone to do some maintenance on the house. You know, basically, if I go down there and they call me and I find it, I'm kicking you out of the house. I don't have a choice at that point anymore, okay? So well, people say, well, come take a look, see, you know, maybe, you know, I said, if I come down there and I see something that you want me to take a look at and it's dangerous, I'm kicking you out of the house. And they go, well, I don't want that. I want you to make them fix it. And I,
exactly.
Nothing I can do right now. So,
but when could you do something about it?
If we adopted the property maintenance code, okay? Now, the problem we were talking about before is adopting the property maintenance code. We don't really have staff. I get at least two or three calls a week of someone, you know, a lot of times in Lake Monticello where they're renting and handrails missing or, you know, there's something, and that's basically straight out of the property maintenance code. We can't do anything right now. We don't have the manpower to do anything right now. So another option is to have what they call a rental inspection zone. You can skip that. That was just for people. Inspection district. So basically what that says is you can adopt an ordinance to inspect rental units in specific areas, okay, specific districts. And that's usually because of, you'll read it underneath there, that there's a need to protect the public health. It's a blighted, it's in process of deteriorating, and it needs inspection. So if you have one area where you have a lot of good rentals, you don't need to go there. You wouldn't define that as a district, but you can do that. And the districts can be any size. You just have to be very specific about where that district is.
Like two trailer parks and Columbia.
Yeah, I mean, this, we've finally gotten to something, I think, that has application and that the folks in Columbia would have expressed a clear interest in having something they can use. This seems to be it.
Yeah, we talked to the county attorney about this, too.
Well, so anyway, the way I understand this is that, you know, when you get your ordinance to do this, you would basically say in the ordinance that we are enforcing the property maintenance code in those districts. And then you can enforce it there, and you don't have to enforce it anywhere else. And it would allow me still to say to people, like, if they're calling from Lake Monticello, sorry, you're not part of the rental inspection district. There's nothing I can do for you. I wouldn't have to do anything.
Having this is not discriminatory.
Well, the state law allows you to do it. So whether it is or not, you'd have to ask. You know.
It's discriminatory because you're making choices to do this here.
Yeah, I was just asking a question. You're treating, you know,
it certainly is discriminatory. The question is whether it's invidiously so. And one way to look at this is that it would tend to invite a challenge.
But it is part of Virginia code.
No, certainly. No, we're covered as far as that's concerned. The issue is whether the very application is improper. So if you had, for example, you designated one group that was heavily black, and that was where you did your enforcement entities, then you had another area that was heavily Hispanic, and you didn't enforce that, I would say there's some likelihood that somebody's going to say you're discriminating against the Hispanics in favor of the black, you know, whatever your selection might be. You're discriminating against poor people as opposed to rich people. Well, I guess you're always going to do that. But that's the kind of challenge you're going to have. That is not an obvious problem. And the chances are very good that I would say that you're going to have ethnic groupings in these things because ethnic groups tend to be, tend to follow to some extent the socioeconomic considerations. So you're not going to do this with, you know, $3,000 a month apartment buildings. It's going to be, you know, it's going to be the lower end buildings that, that are going to get this.
But if we're looking at it, I mean, at least in my mind, I don't know what Steve's thinking, in my mind, is this a solution for Columbia, which we have an identified problem, low residents.
I think that's a good point.
I think, so does that create insidiously, is that what you said? Yeah. Insidiously discriminatory incident?
I think in our case, Columbia is kind of unique.
In many ways, it's kind of unique.
Well, it is. Yeah. And the blighted housing in Columbia is real obvious. Whereas I can't think, you know, I stand to be corrected, but I can't think of anywhere else in the county that you have that kind of obvious concentration. So could you do that? Could I defend that? Yeah, I'm not saying I couldn't defend it.
And because of the fact of its location and the effect of the floods, it's increased the problem there.
Well, that's why you're getting this concentration in that location.
Right. That's what I'll.
No, that's right. And I'm not trying to talk you out of it. It's a tool in the box.
And the way it's written is actually to protect the health of those people. She could argue the other way. She said they're getting special treatment for them, so we're going down there.
That's
and
what he was arguing.
You can argue it either way, but it really doesn't matter because.
Oh, I'm in favor of it. I was just asking the question.
Don't get me wrong. Because somebody is going to challenge any decision you make on any subject, so don't worry about it.
Well, it's, you know, the CARE Task Force has identified a lot of things. This solves a problem. Gives the county a tool. To enforce
I won't
things.
Say it solves
it. Does not solve where what we're going to do with this.
It doesn't solve it. It addresses it.
Okay.
Well, that's really going to be my question.
And we need a solution, which we don't yet have,
but we're working on. I think you're heading the same way. The tail is what the big problem is. I can go down and tell the landlord, the owner of the property, that the property is bad, you got to do this, and I know what he'll do because I know what he's done before. He'll kick the people out. And he'll wait a few months and he'll put something else in and do a cash transaction again. I don't know how to fix that. And we certainly don't have, as a county, the ability to relocate people and put them in housing because we don't own and manage any housing.
We have
very little rentals in our county anyway. So
to put it a little bit more objectively, if you come to the landlord and say, you got this house and it's a dump and you got to fix it, and you're in this identified area. Leaving aside what Mr. Nichols said, and he's absolutely right, of course, but leaving that aside, the landlord's reaction almost necessarily is going to be, okay, I'll do that, but that means I got to put money into it, and if I'm going to put money into it, rent's going up.
Sure.
So you have to recognize that. And that's going to happen.
Yeah, I know about that too, Steve.
I know that one other time somebody went down there and was doing some touring or something, and they come in, the electrical stuff was hanging down from the box and so forth, and then they had 12 gallons of gas in 1 gallon containers there and so forth like that. So.
Well, it's a self-limiting problem.
I don't think we want to correct the problem that way. Well, I mean,
no, it's not that you don't want to correct it, and I'm not trying to talk you out of it, but there are
ramifications that we have to be really clear that, and Ms. Eager, we talked about this at the Thomas Jefferson Planning, talking about affordable housing. You brought that to our attention. It is important that we think about that some of these individuals are just as part of this community as anybody else. And I believe that waiting on somebody to call, and then we have the choice of this person is going to be kicked out and this family has no place to live. We're talking about aesthetics, and we're talking about homeless people who are going to have no place to go. Nobody wants to live like that.
But what happened? We'd rather have that type of call, or would we have rather have a call that the sheriff department that I've got five people down here in this apartment dead because of the chemicals and so forth like that.
I'm not taking for granted what you said, and maybe you have more to add to this, but we definitely need to address the Columbia area, but we're talking on a whole, in my mind, a whole scale area.
Holistic approach.
You know, this is across the board, because I can tell you, living at the lake, I don't know if some people rent or whatever it is that they do, but their properties are no more different, and they're guided only by, you know, certain, you know, laws within the lake. But if we don't, in my mind, make it flat across the board, I know that you're limited in staffing and you prioritize and do that. I just think that very feeling of discriminatory or whatever that may be, when the only thing we're really trying to do is address the problem and try to clean some of this stuff up. So I wouldn't, to me, doing it by district would be an issue more or less than saying this is what we're going with across the board.
One thing I think you should bear in mind is that remedies like this are very largely low-end remedies for low rental levels and poor people. And the reason it is because virtually all of these issues are going to be covered by the Landlord-Tenant Act. So if you have a $4,000 a month apartment and there's a problem with water leakage or the hot water heater doesn't work or something like that, that's all addressed in the Landlord-Tenant Act. The problem is that person with the $4,000 a month apartment can call his lawyer and say, sue the landlord, he's doing these bad things to us, we need to fix this. Mr. Nichols's point is very apropos on this, and that is, you're paying $150 a month for this house, and Mr. Inspector Man here comes in and says, you got to come in and put $10,000 into this house tomorrow, or I'm going to shut it down. Well, I can't do that. So the quickest thing I can do is kick everybody out. Wait till the smoke clears, and just like Steve was saying, then put the next bunch of unfortunates in there for $175 a month. And I think you need to recognize that.
So how are they putting people back in there? Any way he wants. He kicked the last group of folks that were kicked out was following a complaint that I got a complaint, and I initiated inspections with the health department to look at sewage at the green building on the corner across from the menu. Right. Because the health department was squeezing him that they had to fix something with the sewer system, with the drain field, he booted the person out of that house, and there was a hullabaloo in Columbia because people said, well, you can't do that, there's Landlord-Tenant Act, and except the people down there are not on any kind of Landlord-Tenant Act documents. I mean, I would be surprised, even though it's legally required for the first month to have a real live document and et cetera, even though it's legally required, I'd be surprised if he has any of that. Because he trades rent for
exactly
for, again, for food stamps or you name it, whatever. Stamps. I mean, it's legendary. My problem is those three or four units down there are some of the worst we have in the county. The two trailer parks in Fork Union are nearly as bad. If you've ever been in either one of those trailer parks, they're wrecks. But the Columbia ones are probably structurally unsafe, but we don't have a chance to really go in them. They are probably not healthful, and the folks there don't have a lot of alternative to go someplace. That's why they're there. They pay the $150 cash or trade sex or whatever, and because it's a drug haven and it's part of that corner. I would rather have the problem of them being kicked out tomorrow and me having to call everybody in the state to find a place to put them than I would have them let the owner of those properties continue to do what he's doing and have people continue to be victimized by him, even if they are sometimes willing victims.
But the thing about it, so we get some people out, isn't that property posted in some way?
If it's condemned.
Well, if we see someone else move back in there, and he hasn't corrected the problems, then we've got a legal case, and we'll kick, you know, those people would have to, we'd have to go after him right away. But I mean, we would be watching really closely. If we've made people leave from there and the problem has not been corrected, I don't know what signage and what rules there are, but
The rule says that you know, if he violates the Tenant Act, people move out. He's found in violation of the maintenance code, he has to fix those violations before a tenant can move back in.
If he moves the tenant back in, is that in any way a criminal violation?
Say that again.
So he moves somebody back in never having fixed anything. At what point, if ever, does this rise to a criminal violation?
It might, but that's not really the problem. Because the problem is that I bring my tenant in for $150 a month. It's at best a month-to-month transaction.
Sure.
So the inspector comes down and says, this building is bad. You need to fix it or we're going to condemn it. Okay, I'll just give these people notice they've got to get out. They've got a 30-day problem.
The bad part is this landowner is taking advantage of these people.
And we'll continue
putting them in danger.
Well, he certainly has for the last 40, 50 years.
Yeah, and there was no authority to fix it before because the town was structurally a town, and therefore the county didn't have the ability to oversee. Right, the county didn't have authority. So the town did, but they didn't have the resource to do it. And we've contacted the health department. Myself, just a dozen times myself. We've met with them on site. We've had meetings here with staff. We've been going through this for several years. But again, not with any ability until the last 2 years, since summer of 16, when the town was disestablished. So now we've got the planning and zoning administrator has put out, the code enforcement officer has put out a violation notice to the property owner on one thing. VDOT is coming to do a notice on another thing. As soon as the VDOT thing is corrected, we've got another notice ready to go out. But we need every tool in our quiver to fix this kind of stuff and not just Columbia. But I don't see the same problems, and we're not hearing the same problems out of Lake Monticello or Kent Store or you know.
Right, but and if you look, I'm sorry, I interrupted you. Go ahead. Now, I mean, I appreciate your concerns that you're right. We have this everywhere, and it would be best from day one to apply this to the county. On the other hand, realistically, we do not have the staff, and we're not going to hire three people.
From my perspective, it would be good to see how it works in one area.
And that's where I was headed.
And it would send a message pretty strongly around the
Send a message, find out how it works, and is it effective? And if it's not, then we can repeal the part that we have it. And presumably, this is an area that we do have local interests, demands, phone calls to Steve, I'm quite sure. I mean, I've served on the CARE Task Force, kind of representing the Planning Commission and trying to see what we have going there. And I think this is what those citizens are asking us to do. And if this doesn't work, Steve can say, we did the best we could with this tool. Now we're exploring other tools. But, I mean, the truth is, if those get abandoned and people stay out of there, eventually they will be torn down. They are not reasonably repairable buildings. You can't do major renovations because, for the most part,
they have to go to the federal floodplain standards.
Right, they are in the floodplain. So you cannot realistically do major renovations. And ultimately, the biggest concern with tearing them down is where did those people go? And we do owe those people, you know,
those human beings need help.
Exactly. But
there is help available in our country. We have lots of resources. We have lots of needs. The problem is always connecting the two together. And there are lots of resources we can tap in Central Virginia to help. But do we, because we don't have the ability to do housing, do we not go after try to fix the problem? So
well, I can appreciate you talking about connecting them because you know they're going to be kicked out.
Mm-hmm.
One of my questions is with the business rules of the county, and you know we just went through the process with artists and you know and
yes,
all that
right,
stuff.
Right.
How does that apply to people who rent homes. I
mean, it does not.
It does not.
So the Landlord-Tenant Act, I just had a meeting with Piedmont Housing Alliance 2 weeks ago and went through A to Z, and Jason and I were down there and talking to them, and there is, or Brad and I, I'm sorry, there is a lot, there are a lot of tools in the quiver, but the county's not necessarily the enforcement agency for that. It's health department in some cases. It's, I don't know who else, but the county doesn't.
Well, Landlord-Tenant Act is
social services, because there's a, if there's a.
That's a civil act.
And that's mostly the tenant complaining about a problem, so. It is really a vexing problem that drives me nuts every day. And I'd like to find a solution, but we've got to find some way to chip away at it, because it hasn't been fixed in 50 years since Camille came through in 69. And we've done more in the last 2 years than the 48 years before that. But it's still an iterative process. It takes some time. And I know the Care Task Force folks are frustrated as heck. People who live in Columbia are frustrated as heck. There are developers, not developers. There are rich people that live in that area down there that have been meeting with some of the Care Task Force people that are dying to help do something, but their story is, well, if you can't even take care of the raw sewage that's bubbling up out of the ground, why would we invest any money in Columbia? That's why we met again with the health department, trying to squeeze them, because the health department's responsible for sewage, not us. We can't do anything about it.
So, and, you know, it's terrible. That's another limitation. The magic word he used in that case was invest. And Columbia is a bad investment.
Mm.
That's why.
Today.
No, it's going to be because of its natural situation. You can't go down there as a sensible investor and say, I'm going to renovate a large number of buildings. Obviously there are exceptions to this, but you can't go down there and take one of those blighted buildings and build it up so that it's in good shape.
It would need to be new construction.
It costs so much. It costs so much to do it, even if it's not in a floodplain, it's going to cost so much to do it. The people we're talking about helping are priced out of the market.
And they have no transportation, they have no grocery, they have no playground, it's the worst possible place for little kids to live. I mean, it's nice to be in the woods and play out and stuff like that, but there truly is nothing remotely close to Columbia in the way of services other than that little mini mart. It's 7 miles to George's Tavern to get to a gas station, or 6 miles back to Columbia to a gas, or to Fort Peter to a gas station, and nothing in between.
I think that this is a good idea, and I think that we can have a lot of feelings that all of us do about the people, but we also have to think about that health, safety, and welfare. If they call him tomorrow and say, well, you need to come down here because we just found all these people died from somebody. You got a bad electric line here, and you got all this gas, and somebody spilt it, and then it sparks there, and it burns up, and you got, and nobody is able to go in there and look at the problem. And you know,
I can assure you of one thing: if we do what we're doing now, it will continue to be a problem. It's not going to improve, because the landlord of the five structures that we're talking about is not going to change until somebody makes him change. His son's a lawyer. He gets away with anything because nobody's ever put any pressure on him. The town never did because they didn't have the ability to do.
Well, that's not quite true. The town, in fact, did do exactly that.
And what was the result?
It worked. But they only did it once. And it cleaned up a number of those. I wrote that ordinance. And that was 25 years ago. But they had some of these blighted buildings. They got a blighted building ordinance, and they had those buildings removed. They were removed, and he was charged on his tax bill for the cost of it and that sort of thing. It worked.
So how do we get inside?
But that doesn't buildings? Solve the housing problem.
Right. No,
we can go ahead and tear the buildings down. But where does it leave the tenants?
Just to make it clear that, condemning the building, and enforcing the maintenance code, one's heavy-handed, one's not. So let's say I do go in there and I find some things like they need smoke detectors or some handrails, some minor things. I can have him do that first and then try to slowly get him to fix it up over time. So it doesn't necessarily mean I have to kick them out. with the maintenance code. It's not inherently dangerous. We start with the things that we think you need to do first and see if we can fix a few things. That would be heat and sanitary, you know, so if the toilets aren't working, things like that. And then let him fix that, and then give him 60, 90 or more days to fix some of the other stuff so that maybe put a little bit of money in. There's a possibility. In other words, if I find all these things, I don't say, you got 30 days to fix it, or they're being kicked out.
That's the mechanics of the code. But Steve and I both know that the reality is he's not putting any money in there. And he's going
to... Right, I just wanted to...
So I understand.
Yeah, make sure I'm not going in there guns blazing, trying to kick everybody out.
But they will be kicked out. That is the reality.
See, yeah, I mean, if he's held to any legitimate and legal standard that we would have in our toolkit to do, and he knows it, or his son, the lawyer, knows it or something, but if he's held to some standard, he's going to find a way to get out of it and walk away from it or move the tenants out, but he's not going to put money in it. He's not going to renovate those buildings. He's not going to turn into a great landlord tomorrow. It's never going to happen.
Well, there is one thing. This is, I don't want to be macabre about this, but this landlord's not getting any younger. Now, what happens when he ceases to be the landlord, which might happen any time? He's older than I am.
But he and his wife own it jointly, and his son owns some of the properties. They're you know, depending on when they change, some are owned by the junior, some are owned by the parents.
I understand, but that is a factor to consider. This is a unique person.
Yeah, I'm not very interested in allowing him to age out of this problem.
I mean, we'll outlive you.
That's a terrible plan. I'm just going to suggest that we recommend that the county, the Board of Supervisors, adopt this inspection district. And I think the positive parts outweigh the negative. I don't want to be reading in the paper about people dying down there.
Well, practically speaking, I think Mr. Zimmer is right. Implementing this code countywide, I don't see how Kevin can keep up with it.
I'm not sure he's going to be able to keep up with this, but...
Right, but I mean, at least you have a chance.
Not countywide.
The board's got to make
it. And we'd like to see him spend his time not looking at that handrail.
But what I don't want to
see is something that's really...
Well, the other thing is, what I don't want to have happen is try to implement this countywide. He simply can't do it, and he gets spread so thin that he's not effective anywhere because he just doesn't have time.
No, we will spend some time in court with some people.
And this is the ideal place, if we talk about Columbia, it's the ideal place.
It's certainly the low-hanging fruit. They're not going to have to look hard to find violations. Yeah. They're not going to have to work too hard.
They drive through the intermediate.
Exactly. I'm
going to drive 55
miles an hour. You can see them.
Well, I do the speed limit.
Drive at night, you won't be able to see them.
No.
Well, the fact that we've had this discussion, it brings to light a specific, of course, issue. Mr. Chairman, I agree with you. I don't want to wake up to people being like that, but I just wanted it on record that we're all clear that people are going to be homeless at no fault of their own, doing the best that they can. We considered that in the decision that we make moving forward, because it will come up. It will be, we will see that. And, you know, I'm about being honest with folks, you know, this is why, if you've ever driven through that area, this is what you see, this is how this, and you know, that can clearly be articulated. Mm-hmm. And when we talk about staffing and, you know, people's ability to get everywhere, those things can be clearly demonstrated. It's when it's not articulated clear enough for people to be able to look at and see. And then we have other plans in place with regional partners to look at how we can accommodate that.
So, yeah, and I think we need to have resources listed to be able to bring every resource we can to bear to legally enforce a reasonable living standard for those folks that live there, and also have a reasonable set of helping hands to show them what alternatives are available for them. And it can't be a county one because we don't have any county housing and we don't want to be a housing authority, but there are lots of resources that we can help them. I predict that the vast majority of the people you won't hear a word from.
And
if we don't, then we don't have a problem.
Steve, you know,
he's destroying.
But there are some of these residents down there that are long term. They're not.
Yeah, yeah.
Some of those residents, when
when they get kicked out,
yep.
which they will,
yep.
don't fool yourself. Everybody's getting kicked out if we enforce this in a particular building, because
right.
that's his solution.
Right.
They're going to be the ones that are mad at us. Now, I still feel like,
right.
in the long run, we are doing right by them because these conditions are so bad.
Right.
But some of these residents have been going to be the one called Steve.
Yeah, there's one gentleman in the greenhouse
yeah.
that we know, and there's the husband and wife that are in the old post office. That's where there's
the
current violation's going down, because that's just a wreck. And there's at least two families in the gray house that have been there for a long time. The yellow and white house that we kind of focus on all the time, those are all short-term rentals and pop in and pop out. And, but anyway, I had the emergency management coordinator pull all the fire, rescue, and police calls to any one of those five addresses in the last 2 years, because even though those folks are all mandated reporters, I'm worried that maybe they didn't really report. And if some rescue person or fire person or sheriff can tell me that, yeah, we're in there, there was, you know, it smelled like raw sewage and there was holes in the wall and there was no heat in there, well, then I got a reason to go in there. I can get the health department to go in too. So I'm looking for every avenue to find ways to fix the standard or make the housing issues go away. And if that means we have to help find people something else that's suitable, I'm absolutely willing to spend time on that. Because for 50 years, he has been there 50 years, but there's been no solutions along the way.
Can I ask one other question? And it'll be maybe tabled and based on zoning. When we talk about housing and where those people would go, and then when we were talking in the work session about those buildings and one day being able to have one major administrative office, are those buildings that are being used right now here in Main Street area, are they capable of being reverted back to home living?
Probably not.
No?
Okay. We're basically talking about commercial buildings.
Yeah.
These are commercial buildings.
They're all old little storage and stuff. I mean, somebody could convert it, I suppose, but there's a
whole lot
of money to put in all of them to make it
most of them always
legally habitable.
Okay.
Still worth a lot.
Yeah, you probably put four or five families in there, but that wouldn't solve.
There's no like showers and things like that in there. There's no bathtubs or there's a toilet and a sink,
kitchen,
but they're offices. Yeah.
Okay.
So,
okay.
Yeah, and they're really old. I want them to turn to something commercial so there's actually some revenue, but I also just don't want to have to maintain it. And the other thing is, if the Savannah Louisa Housing Foundation or Habitat for Humanity wanted to come in and buy those from the county, or the county wanted to donate to them if they turned them into affordable housing, that'd be great. But I'm pretty sure the county's not going to want to take on any affordable housing as a manager, like a city does or a town does.
Okay, that was what I was looking
for. Yeah. Yeah, it's a harder thing for us than a city or a town, but there are resources that could do that. We could provide some. We need rental housing in our community.
It would almost certainly violate the zoning ordinance.
That's why I brought that up. Sure,
it was the B1.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Payne, procedurally, if the Planning Commission wanted to make a recommendation on this outside of the zoning ordinance, what would be the way to go about that?
Well, the Commission is at liberty to advise the Board of Supervisors anytime it wants to. I don't think technically there's any role for the Commission with respect to these things. That's not to say it wouldn't be appropriate for you to make a recommendation, but it's not like a zoning change where you have a formal hearing and you are required to make a recommendation, that kind of thing. So,
if we were to put together a proposed district with the reference code section,
if you have in mind to use the rental inspection district procedure, that's the way to go.
To make that recommendation to the board?
Well, no, to have the staff come in and just tell you actually where the district lines would be.
The meets and bounds for that district.
Yeah.
Well, it would basically be adopting the ordinance with that verbiage.
Well, no, the commission doesn't do that.
No, I know.
The commission would be making a recommendation. Mr. Zimmer would be the spokesman for you to come in and say,
this is what we recommend that the board adopt. And
public comments?
You're entitled to that.
Make on the agenda.
Make presentations to the board. So you can do that.
Well, I mean, but
Mr. Zimmer's really looking pretty good.
As a planning commission rep, but also as a care task force rep, too.
Being the fact you are the person that's with the care task force.
Yeah. You too, man.
Just thinking that you have
better articulate this.
The fact is,
Ms. Murray, though, the two of you really ought to do it, because I think the discussion, yeah, I'm serious, the discussion too. About human beings and housing needs is a really important one that I don't want people to forget. That means the board is going to have to buy into that it's going to take a little bit of staff time to help in this transition process besides just enforcement. And they need to hear that. So,
I mean, I certainly would be glad to go.
This is not a lifelong thing. This is like a come to one board meeting and talk for a few years.
What you really need to do is ask the staff to give you some structure.
Yeah, sure.
What to recommend and how to present it. And then you all can decide how you want to present it. Do you want to have a two-person presentation committee or, you know, however you want to do that? And I'm not suggesting that be formal.
Or staff present, you just foot stomp it. I mean, we'll put it together, but we'll get it to you and talk to you about it.
That's probably the way that
we
should do it.
From the crowd.
Yeah. That's probably the most effective way to have the staff present it. And you all could be there and, you know, you could address particular issues involved with it.
Okay.
That's what I said.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's a lot to do. It's protecting the citizens that live there, and it's also trying to send a message to this landlord that's taken advantage of these.
And it's one of the gateways to Flavanna County and on a scenic byway of the Commonwealth. And we would want it to be nice.
And, you know, as I saw, you know, I took advantage of the Ravana Conservation Alliance offer to take a plane ride over there at Ravana.
It's amazing, isn't it?
It was great. That reservoir where there's going to be a lot of nice houses built in that vicinity is really, really close to Columbia. So there's going to be more traffic. I'm pretty sure none of those houses that are built on that reservoir are going to be affordable housing.
Yep.
So it's going to be money, people driving through there. I mean, I think this is...
The concrete reservoir is going to bring a lot more traffic to the area, for sure.
I mean, I think this is an opportunity for some level, I don't know if I'm going to use the word renaissance, but maybe revival of Columbia.
Yeah. Well, and to make it less bad, if nothing else.
Right.
Because some people have some really pie-in-the-sky things about, you know, renovating Columbia, and it's going to have shops and condos and et cetera, balderdash. Maybe 100 years from now. But
don't forget, 100 years... is my segue. You've heard me say this before, you're going to hear it again. The reason Columbia is there is that it was a bustling commercial port.
Right.
And when the for various reasons, some of which were man-made, some of which were not, the canal stopped being a viable driver of economic value, what was left? And that's, I asked that rhetorically. And all you got to do is look at the other river ports on the James River, the most obvious being Scottsville. And Scottsville survived the loss of the canal. And there are various reasons for that, one of which is it's on the major north-south highway
it's a crossroads where ours isn't. Columbia's not.
Right.
And also...
Don't forget that. There's no economic drivers there.
Right.
And so don't expect to come in and, you know, have it look like Hot Springs.
Well, the people early on the board that thought it was going to turn into Crozet are dreaming. I want it to be different than what it is, but it's not going to be Crozet.
Scottsville, too, when they went after the mule and they started really looking at their problem, and they went to Washington and got the Corps of Engineers to install that levee to protect the town and put the pump stations and so forth like that. None of this happened in Columbia.
There,
there was a bit, well, but you had, and even before,
there's only 34 registered voters in Columbia. I mean, it's a really
high number of people. Scottsville had an economic base. It had the Uniroyal plant and various things like that that Columbia hasn't had since the railroad went through in 1907. So just bear that in mind.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I always have a soft spot for Columbia, so I don't mean to be a bad man.
So staff will work up a kind of a scenario and when it's going to be on the agenda, things like that, and get back to planning commission, especially the two of you. So because we could use some advocacy of somebody that sees it from a different perspective than staff. And when you look at all avenues on here, but the board didn't really like this the last time we talked about it. Maybe they won't this time, but we'll see.
Well, I just want to say I've got about 25 or 30 rentals. And all of a single family except one is a duplex. And you can take some of those people from Columbia. I think the best thing for you to do maybe in Columbia is try to keep them in place and improve where they are. Because, I don't want them, that's for sure. I mean, I've been to some people that sometimes that I think that are going to take care of things. But you go in and look, pull back a shower curtain, and there's two adjustable wrenches, lock wrenches there. When you ask where your faucet's gone to, or the handles, I don't know, you know. So I mean, what old expression, tiger doesn't change his stripes. You can take some of those people and put them in the best properties around, and you go back 30 and 45 days later, and you'd be surprised how they've gone down. I think you're going to have to teach them how to take care of property. I mean, you go through Columbia and see the doors propped wide open, flies going in and out, and I know what you're talking about, like the old post office building there and so forth. But some of these people wouldn't take care of anything.
And the one thing for sure, though, Mr. Johnson, is that we're not going to renovate that housing enough to pee people in place. It's not going to happen. It's in the floodplain. Uh-huh. They can't make enough changes without building to floodplain standards, and therefore no one's going to put that kind of money in those properties.
Well, I don't know who's going to rent to them when they come in from Columbia, but I know one thing, that because I do a pretty good background check on my people, I sure wouldn't want them. I'm sure some good people down there, don't get me wrong, but they've been down there and living that way of life for so long. It's probably become so ingrained, it's part of them. It is them.
Yeah. Well, Mr. Johnson, with what you're saying, I would like to say this. Some people, for whatever reason, are in situations that they never had control over. They can't afford to get another faucet. They can't afford to tell this guy. They want to, and if it's not for people batting for them, such as what Mr. Chairman said, Mr. Nichols has said, our attorney has said, they wouldn't have anything. And so, in my mind, we have to hold these individuals who are doing business in the county to a standard. There's an expectation of a livable housing area. You have to charge them, I would assume, through the landlord lease agreement. If you destroy property, you have to XYZ, that's why you check off the list. There are certain things that the person who is renting and making funds in this county is not upholding, and they can abuse people who don't have. So it's important that we speak loud and clearly to the expectations or the limitations we have with all of these other bodies that it's not happening. And then as an individual owner of a property, you're doing the background checks and all those different things. You can do that to make the determination of who would live there. But I think we have to send a message to people who does business where they are having inhabitants, because I can't have somebody just come in my house and do
things. Those tenants are not going to speak up under their current circumstances. They do not have a voice. They're not allowed to have a voice. And I know there's a lot in the world that's about personal choice. But this circumstance means
the bad part about it,
they're on the street, or
these people are being taken advantage of.
Yep.
Not only by this landlord, by drug dealers, by pimps and other people, they're taking advantage of these people. They're destroying these people. So there's some way to try to solve. And I think this may help with
Well, I would rather have them have a problem someplace else than in the current conditions they're in. So if we can get the landlord to either fix or change, and we can find another place for these people to go to, even if it's... There's almost no place that's going to be worse than where they're at.
I mean, some of those conditions, I mean, I go camping with the Boy Scouts, sleeping in the tents better
than some of those
conditions. I'm telling you that right now.
Yes.
Don't say that for the building official.
That's not him, something he doesn't know.
Yeah.
I don't sleep in a tent at home. It's not my house.
So we don't report.
Backing off pretty quick.
We don't make enforce all of it. There are no easy solutions to this kind of thing.
That is the question.
And we don't make assumptions about the people who live in the building. Mine is for the structure.
That's
so my job is to make sure that the structure is safe, regardless of who's living there.
Are we in? Have we finished this discussion and we've decided that we have two representatives of the Planning Commission that after consultation with the Planning Department recommend to the...
I think you'd be better, what you'd be better off to do is let the staff bring back a recommendation and formulate your course of action when you see that.
Okay. Sounds good. Is there anything else that we need to go over tonight?
No, sir, Mr. Chairman.
And you've finished your presentation?
Yes, sir.
Okay. If no one objects, we will adjourn right now at 32.